Maui Nui is on a mission to help balance axis deer populations for the good of our environment, communities, and food systems on the island of Maui. They've shared over 126,000 pounds of nutrient-dense protein with the Maui community. Secure your spot now. Become a snack subscriber and join in helping to build more resilient food and ecosystems on Maui. Visit MauiNuiVenison.com. That's MauiNuiVenison.com. And use promo code BEAR for 20% off your first order.
Hey, everybody, listen up. I got mega huge news. Meat Eater Live is heading back out on the road. That's right. Join me and the crew. Clay Newcomb, Cal, Yanni, Spencer's going to be there. Phil the Engineer is going to be there. Meat Eater Live, headed back out. Now, when you get every ticket, okay, every ticket you buy, you get a signed copy of our new Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook. This tour is celebrating the release of the book. Buy a ticket, get a signed copy, Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook, wild game recipes for the grill, smoker, camp stove, and campfire, which I'll point out is a $38 value. Here's where we're going to go. April 23rd, the Mesa Arts Center in Mesa, Arizona. April 24th, the Balboa Theater in San Diego. April 25th, the Grove in Anaheim, California. April 27th, the Crest Theater in Sacramento. April 29, the Union in Salt Lake City. April 30, the Egyptian in Boise. May 1, the Wilma Theater in Missoula. May 2, the Bing Crosby Theater in Spokane, Washington. May 4, Revolution Hall in Portland, Oregon. And May 5, the last day of the tour, Pantages Theater in Tacoma, Washington. For tickets and more information, visit the events page at themeateater.com. Hope to see you at the show.
My name is Clay Newcomb, and this is a production of the Bear Grease Podcast called the Bear Grease Render, where we render down, dive deeper, and look behind the scenes of the actual Bear Grease Podcast. Presented by FHF Gear, American-made, purpose-built hunting and fishing gear that's designed to be as rugged as the places we explore.
What's your favorite type of bonanza? Mine's when it's like all yellow, no brown spots, no greens either.
The favorite bonanza?
Yeah.
I don't even know what that means.
Like the type of fruit?
It sounds like he's describing a banana.
Bonanza fruit? Oh, you're joking.
That was like,
I'm making a joke.
That was Boo-doo. Like is a bad one joke. Of those kids. It's like, a, like jokes like you tell
English
your 4-year-old.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
Bonanza and banana yeah. are spelled close together.
Yeah,
I don't think it's
similar.
An English joke as much as just like a
bad joke.
Like a bad, maybe yeah. dad joke even.
I think it's a dad joke.
Yeah,
I think end up
bad
eating,
dad
it's in that
joke.
Category.
I mm-hmm. eat a lot of brown bananas because
it takes 2 seconds. For
I'll
them to
tell you
around.
Who'd rather eat a brown one that's like about to be, you know, look like.
Turned into banana bread.
Yeah.
What we call
Gary Newcomb.
Pig food.
Gary,
really? You love a real yeah.
Gary,
brown
Gary Newcomb now, made it an ethical and moral, you know, statement inside of our house to eat brown bananas.
Well, so that's where it started for me. Like, I'm not going to throw away bananas, but I would prefer a yellow one. You know what I'm saying?
See, like, he would prefer... I mean,
it,
he went
really,
to the store.
Or did it, like, did it just shift that way because of the moral stand?
Oh, 100%. But I'm saying if he went to Walmart and there was, like, brown ones there,
yeah.
he'd pick those up. And by the time we got home, he yeah. would have told us, you're going to eat those brown ones and you're going to love it.
Yeah.
Because not everybody gets something for free in life.
Yeah.
Right, Gary?
That's right. It's well, all about
my
money.
Question.
It's all about the money, man.
My question, though, is would he eat a black bear bonanza?
Yeah.
Oh.
Oh.
Excellent. And
bringing
that's exactly
it back.
Where we're starting.
Bringing it back.
We have one. Well, we have many, many special guests today.
It's true.
But one of our special guests today is James Brandenburg. James, this is your first time on the Bear Grease
it is.
Render.
Yep.
Oh,
now, you're
it?
A long time Bear Grease
yeah.
going, throwing old
long time
school.
Listener, first time caller.
Yeah.
A
yeah.
devotee.
He, so, James would have been on the Bear Grease podcast.
Didn't we
oh.
do a live render?
Oh,
last year
yeah,
at
yeah,
the Black
yeah,
Bear.
Yeah,
you were on that.
At the Black
at
Bear.
The Black Bear, the first
bonanza.
Annual.
Yeah.
Black Bear
yes.
Bonanza.
And so the reason, part of the reason James is here, well, that's not why he's here. He's here because he's James Brandenburg.
Oh, yeah.
And he's just here. because he's just that
JB
kind of guy.
Fans.
And he's got a cool truck.
Got a good truck.
It's good
what kind of truck's he got?
He's got a Chevy A7. What is that thing?
That's a GMC AT4.
Okay.
AT4. I like those AT4s.
I tell you, it looks good,
it's
man.
Got some, I've got a GMC, but it's not quite that new and fancy, James.
It's got some nice flavor on the camper shell.
Yep.
We got a Pebble Mine sticker.
I saw the Pebble Mine sticker.
A BHA sticker.
It's got tires. It's got the wheels. I mean, it's got the stuff, you know.
Well, you walked right past his truck and walked right past mine. What'd you think of mine?
I thought your truck looked real good,
2014
too.
2014 Chevy Silverado.
Oh, totally functional.
2014 Silverado work truck edition.
Absolutely.
I know. We hear it on the commercials all the time.
Been to Montana pulling mules like 4 times, New Mexico, Colorado, been all over the country.
As a shout V6. Out to General Motors,
and
every time I
washed.
Think about that, that's the truth. Every time I think about that truck and you hauling that mule trailer with 2 mules in it with a V6 in there, I'm always impressed.
Oh, me too.
I can't believe it.
So is everybody I pass.
It might impress you more to know I drove it with a V6 in there, so with mules on the back.
Oh, really?
And so I think that. You know, that kind of gives it an extra layer of credibility because it was going about 20 miles faster than when Clay drove it.
That's the truth.
It'll pull that fuel trailer 70 miles per hour all the way to Montana.
Now, really. Now James, do you that. Have to have a souped-up new GMC to attend the Black Bear Bonanza?
Gosh, I hope not.
Or are all vehicles welcome?
All vehicles welcome.
Okay, so the teacher in me is wanting to put some structure to the Black Bear Bonanza and what we're talking about.
You want to tell us about the Black Bear Bonanza.
All right. The 2023 Black Bear Bonanza. It's a educational fundraising event. It's put on by Arkansas BHA. It'll be March 4th at the Benton County Quail Barn in Bentonville, Arkansas.
March 4th is a Saturday.
It is a Saturday.
Let me start this over. He said this was a fundraiser event. People don't like to go to fundraisers.
Or educational
event. This is a stomp down good time.
That's right.
About Arkansas black bears and a bunch of cool people. And a podcast. And
I was thinking that we need to start with a better
and
hook.
Knives.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It'll be so much fun when people get there that they won't even know
that it's a fundraiser.
That it's a fundraiser / educational event.
Fun.
Yes.
Yeah.
Fundraiser.
Putting the fun in fundraiser.
That's right. There we go.
I heard
there
they were going to have a live black bear just roaming loose in the event.
Dancing black bear.
Don't let that secret get out. We need to keep that right
here
in the room.
What are we doing? What are we doing at the Black Bear Bonanza?
Okay, so we'll have some cooking demos. We're going to do a Bear Grease Render podcast.
So we'll all be there.
Well, I mean, there will be.
I mean, I'm pretty confident everybody in this room will be there.
Okay.
I'm 99% confident that everyone in this room will be there.
I mean.
I'll go if Misty goes.
We got to talk to Isaac, see if he'll come.
I'll go if Josh goes.
I really want
Josh
to.
Goes.
Yep.
You'll go if Josh goes. Okay, we got to do it.
We'll
Brent Reeves will be there.
Yep. Brent's going to MC the Owl Hoot contest for us this year.
Nice. Very nice.
And you're going to judge it this year, Clay.
Yes.
So last year, Clay MC'd.
Okay.
And this year, we're going to put his
yes.
judging skills to the test.
That's what you need to do.
I'll be the greatest Owl Hoot judge that ever walked this continent.
I have no doubt.
So that means he can't compete.
Exactly. It's like a food
critic. I'm not saying I'm the greatest Owl Hooter.
No, I know that. But I'm saying you can't compete.
No.
In a contest.
But he would be like if like the scary food critic came to your restaurant and was like picking apart every single thing you did. When it comes to Owl Hoots, Clay's
he's the Gordon Ramsay
of Owl Hoots. Trill was lacking a little bit.
Yeah. Oh, let me hear your laugh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man. Hey, you know what I want to see with this Owl Hooting contest? I'd like to see the best guys in the world come in here.
That'd be awesome.
Who is the guy? Who is the guy on the front porch of that old house?
He's just a dude from Missouri.
Hey man,
there's
he's
a lot of good,
good
ones
as,
up in Missouri, man.
There about are as a lot good of as good it gets.
It is. And see, what I want to do is I want to start bringing in these guys, and like they would become
legends.
You know how like
friends.
Like a guy would have a racehorse, and he would be like, "I want that racehorse."
Yeah,
and he's up in the stands watching. I'm going to pay for this guy to come down here, and he's going to be like
a ringer.
I'm imagining
he's going to be like, you know, my guy.
Yeah. I'm imagining like 20 years in the future, this has turned into like the bass fishing circuit where they have logos all over their clothing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they pull in the big trucks completely logoed up just to make an album.
Sponsors
if you have, if you are listening to this,
Rich
and you're in
charcoal.
The contiguous United States, you should come to Bentonville, Arkansas for our Owl Hooting contest.
Mm-hmm. And when is it?
And I think even It's March 4th.
Okay.
That's a Saturday.
It's a Saturday. Even people from Alaska and Hawaii are welcome, Clay.
There's no barred owls over there. They don't know who.
I would think people in Canada.
I feel like you're setting up a real underdog story for
a
Hawaiian or an Alaskan.
Yeah.
I just heard half of Alaska light up.
Or someone from the Caribbean. I mean, we're not limited to.
Absolutely.
Yeah. We could have a true cool runnings kind of thing here.
Exactly.
Jamaican.
Oh,
there you go.
It would burn me if somebody from out of this country would. Awesome. I'll be honest. I'm just going to be honest.
Okay, so now I'm imagining Josh Spillmaker, who is in the room and a part of the render today, as a real sort of John Candy-esque expat who moves to Jamaica and coaches
Antigua.
Antigua.
Okay.
What if you got kicked out of the render and you went down there?
Yeah.
And turned some guys to up
rolling large with my team.
Yeah.
Come back in here.
I feel like this is some high quality Bear Grease intellectual property.
The Disney movie.
So where
are
we at? Okay. All right. All right. So we've got.
Hold on, Isaac.
How are you fundraising?
New hashtag. Isaac, quit interrupting.
I'm excited about the bonanza.
Okay. Wait, let Misty talk.
I'm going bananas.
We got two now. Isaac, don't interrupt. Okay. So we got Owl Hoot Contest.
Owl Hoot Contest. We're going to Myron Means from the Game and Fish Commission.
Large carnivore. Yep. Biologist.
He will do another Q&A session.
How large is he?
For us.
How big a boy are you?
Myron will be wearing a pair of overalls and a John Deere cap.
If you have a question as to how big he is, Clay did a video with him on a bear den study that's available somewhere
if
in the
universe.
If only
they knew
how
big I was.
Yeah.
It's all about scale on video.
It is scale.
That's true. The newer things that we're adding to it this year will be, we're going to do a butchering demo.
Oh.
Part of this is...
What are we butchering?
A deer. Hopefully a deer. If we can get one. You know, if it's not that, we'll get a pig or a goat or something like that. It's generally the same thing.
Yeah.
But what we're trying to do is introduce people to the fact that we go outside. Yeah, we can hike, we can bike, but we can also hunt and fish. These things are very normal activities that we engage in. And we have a lot of people moving into the area who maybe don't do that, but are interested in learning how. We're going to try to break down the barriers to that so that they have a little bit more confidence. We're introducing them to BHA as an avenue to gain those skills. And then the fundraising piece of it, dirty word, we've got a couple of things that we're going to raffle off, but I'm gonna pass this around. So
metaphorically and physically.
It is. It's a very large knife. And this knife was made by Garrett Polk. This knife.
This is not one you just want to go traipsing through the woods on your hip.
Well,
you could.
And this is what Garrett told me yesterday. This is what he told me about it yesterday. It's a beautiful knife. The handle is made with a femur bone from Batman.
So
Clay's bone.
Oh, really?
That handle bone, it looks like elephant ivory. It is not. It is the femur bone from the largest black bear I've ever killed.
Yep.
True story.
We'll get some good pictures of this up on the Instagram, but. The steel is AEBL steel.
4.5 inch blade, probably 4.5, 5 inch.
Probably
blade.
4.5, 5 inch blade. I got the particulars. And what Garrett told me is this knife is made to be used.
Okay.
He said,
that's what they all say.
They all want them to be taken out into the field and used. And then he made the sheath for it, and it's got a beaver tail inlay on the sheath. And that beaver was trapped on public land here in Arkansas by one of our board members, Brad Green. Nice. So.
This knife will be in the
special raffle.
Buy a ticket and then put it in a bucket. And yeah, it's great, man. I really like that bare bone, man. It looks like ivory.
Mm-hmm.
Can we talk about Josh's thing?
What? Yeah.
Your hat.
Oh yeah. The stakes are high for the Owl Hoot contest.
Yes. So the winner of the Owl Hoot contest, Clay, is going to get
a handmade
coonskin cap.
Yeah.
That's a big deal.
Yeah, made by Josh Spillmaker.
Yep.
There's only a handful of those on this great planet.
Yep.
That's right.
So last year we had people from all over the country come.
We had from Pennsylvania to Idaho. We had from the Dakotas all the way to South Texas, you know, from across the country.
Last year, I don't know, how many people were there?
We had about 400
people. So that was our first year, and we didn't... I mean, it was the first year we did it. It's a good event, and I'll be there all day.
Yep.
Just hanging out.
It's family friendly. Bring your kids. Everybody 12 and under gets in free. This year tickets are super easy. It's $10 for adults to get in the door.
Yeah,
that, you know, have a good time all day. Yep. Game and Fish Commission is going to support us as well. So they'll have some educational booths and stuff like that. And then, you know, we can't do all of this without sponsors. So far, our big sponsors are Umarex, the air gun company. Mm-hmm. You know, people that listen to this podcast would have heard their ads.
Yep.
Vortex has just, they were like, sign us up. We want to help out. And Umarex was the same way. They reached out to us. They're like, hey, when's that going on? We want to be a part of it. So
good. And we're going to do a live Bear Grease render there. I'm not sure who's going to be on it yet. So all of you in this room, just be on your best behavior.
We'll be like, things aren't looking good
maybe,
for me.
Maybe you can we? Maybe you get picked. Maybe you won't.
This is our audition.
Can we plead our case, or is it a drawing? That, or well, how will that work?
There's a
persuasive essay.
Yeah, a persuasive essay. Well, that's great. So that's March the 4th,
Benton County
Quail Barn
in Bentonville,
Arkansas. Doors open at 9. We'll go from 9 to 5. There'll be things going on all day. Come for the whole day, have a good time. We'll have a website up. So it's the easiest way to find it is go to backcountryhunters.org, look for the events page, and look for Black Bear Bonanza. And by the time this podcast comes out, that page will be up and people can buy tickets. And folks, if you're coming, buy tickets and let us know you're coming so we make sure and have enough of everything there for you. Enough corn dogs, water, and Porta-Johns. Yeah.
Those are the three things I need.
I'm going to have corn dog stand there. No, I'm not.
Clay's corn dog stand.
Well, great. Fantastic. Misty Newcomb had a big day yesterday.
Huge.
Yeah.
She killed her first duck.
Congratulations.
Tell us about that, Misty.
Okay, was it everything you hoped it would be?
I have things to say. All right. I'm not the big hunter in our family. The hunting that I've done pretty much in the last 20 years. Yeah, it's actually Clay. You may be surprised. But the last 20 years, when I've gone hunting, most of the time I'm a chaperone. I'm sitting or like just coming along to hang out with Clay. I could get into duck hunting. Like I could be a duck hunter. And
I believe that's huntress.
Huntress. That's right. That's right. I really didn't know what to expect. Like I've seen pictures of people duck hunting and it kind of looks really different. And I knew waders were involved. So I figured, okay, it's going to be cold, wet, early. This doesn't sound like a lot of fun, but going to take one for the team. First of all, Amory, just as kind of a continuation from Amory Doremus, who was on the last podcast, gave me some tips that she learned from Kaylee that she also learned. And both were on the last podcast.
Shooting tips.
And so we went out the first day, the evening we got there, and we shot
Misty, I also want to tell you, I am right-handed and left-eye dominant as well.
Okay.
So you're not the only one.
Well, and it doesn't even matter, it turns out, when you're shooting ducks, because you're looking at the target, not down the barrel. And so that was a big game changer. So she gave me a few tips, and really, I couldn't believe what a difference it made in a matter of seconds, not hours and not lots of practice. But I was able to shoot those skeet, and that was fun, super fun. I mean, not 100%, but still better than 0%.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next morning we woke up, and I really didn't know what to expect. The dog situation in duck hunting is pretty amazing because the dog's just like, it's super fun to watch a dog that's been bred to do something that has a function. It's really amazing to watch them. And so the dog was like antsy and he was sitting, they had this chair hooked up to a tree and it was just really enjoyable to watch him. You know, we would talk and have, which is like thing two. So thing one, the dog. That's, and I'll come back to thing two in a second, but you can actually talk in duck hunting. But the dog was no nonsense. He was just like sitting there and he was alert and watching. And if you watch the dog, you could see, okay, here's where the ducks are coming in from. And so they were really, everybody was so, so nice. Britt and Clay, especially, you know.
We were with Amory Doremus,
mm-hmm.
me and Brant, and then Luke Naylor.
Who's also been on the podcast.
Who is the...
waterfowl biologist.
No.
He was.
No, he's the director.
Oh. Chief. The chief of the wildlife division.
Chief of the wildlife division.
Way to go,
Luke.
Yeah, and they were so nice. So when the first thing of ducks came in, what do you call them?
They were teal.
Well, but what do you call? What do you call? Is it a
flock?
It's a flock. Okay, so the first flock of ducks came in. They just let me shoot. No one else shot. And the first one came in, and it was like, I don't know what to do. Where's my gun? You know, I mean, like it takes a minute to like get in position.
You don't see them coming in. You know? I mean, like you're kind of hiding, trying to be still, and it's just like all of a sudden, like they're there. Get ready.
And so like I thought I would be prepared, but it took a second to get the gun up. And I mean, I think I shot that first time, but definitely didn't hit anything. But then the second one that came in, they did it again. They just let me shoot. And it was a flock of teal, which apparently is a real fast little bird. And I shot and I got one, and it was super exciting, There's no film of it. Cause we were just, it was all hands on deck to get me to
where you needed to be.
Yeah. And then they released the dog, and the dog just jumps up and looks like it's, you know, this is what its purpose in life is, and got to fulfill it. And it was so, I love the dog. I mean,
Baron.
Yeah. Baron. I'm probably
black lab.
Probably going to have to.
And so
the dog to
then,
go with that
so
kind of...
then we weren't working many mallards. We were sitting on the edge of a overgrown field that had just kind of been and had not been planted or tilled that year. And it kind of butted up against a slough and it had flooded. And so basically it was a flooded field, but didn't have crops in it, but it had coffee bean and a lot of just like
not actual
weeds and vegetation
coffee.
In it. And they had seen some mallards right there the day before. So we were sitting there, but the mallards weren't working much, but we'd have teal come bombing in. And so after Misty Kill went on the second group of ducks that came in. Mm-hmm. So we were like, sweet, we got a duck. And so she was gaining some confidence. And so the next time we're working a group of like seven or eight teal, and they're about to light. And I say, Misty, just start pulling the trigger and don't stop until it clicks.
Clay said, shoot three times.
She's got a plug in there. And I said, shoot three times. And she just looked at me just like, oh, we can do that? Bam, 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 bam.
I hope it wasn't bam, 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 bam.
Well,
I hope bam.
There we go.
So thing one that I like about duck hunting dogs, thing two, you get to talk to people. It's real social. It's a lot more. We were with great people. They were a lot of fun. And everybody was, I mean, they were across the board, just fantastic hosts. And I learned a whole lot about ducks and just, it was just fun to be with people. And it's a lot. And then thing three is just the intensity of it. Like, it's not like, you know, when you go on a deer hunt, you might sit for 5 weeks
take a long nap.
Yeah. And I remember going on Clay one time describing our Shep when he was taking Shep hunting, and he said it was like being in a sleeping bag with a coyote.
What relevance is this?
Just like you're restless. And I kind of felt like Shep in all those deer hunts. It's like, well, we're just going to sit here and... It's just not as it's rewarding at the end, but it's different than duck hunting. Whereas duck hunting, like they come in and it's like boom, boom, boom. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's big.
So you like the dog work?
I did. Yeah. That was pretty amazing to watch.
I've got the perfect breed of dog that you guys, I mean.
You got the perfect dog for me?
I do.
What kind of dog have you got?
Boykin Spaniel.
How's it doing?
Great. You talk about, yeah. Yeah. You talked about the... And the dog sitting there like,
yeah, yeah,
yeah. We went this past Sunday and we had some geese come in and they landed too far out where we had no shot at them, but he could see them. And I was sitting right next to him. We were on the bank of this strip pit pond and he was vibrating like literally. He wanted me to let him go bad, you know, and I didn't have to hold on to him, but I was just in case. There's a lot of good things in duck hunting, but that's probably the best part of it for me is just watching that dog get so excited to go out and catch the thing that it was made to do.
Yeah.
And Boykins are great family dogs. They're great pets. Mm-hmm. Like ours, just, you know, he'll just lay around the house and be snuggly and everything. And then when it's time to go, he's at the door whining.
Ready
to go.
How big is he?
He's 35 pounds. He's about yay tall, you know, what is that, 18, 24 inches at the shoulder.
Okay.
Yep, pretty small. Smaller, much smaller than a lab.
Yeah, yeah. It was a
Isaac,
cool
you've been duck hunting quite a bit?
Oh, yeah.
Where you been?
I can't tell you.
tell me every single spot you've been.
I've been in the Delta in Arkansas a lot, and then just, you know, west central Missouri quite a bit. There's a lot of
Have you been killing some ducks?
Area. Scratching out. No lights out days up in Missouri, and I managed to time it so that My time down in Arkansas last week was bookended by two really great days on either side.
What's a great day?
A limit.
A limit?
Four mallards. Yeah.
So were you by yourself?
No, no. I've got a buddy down there in Duval's Bluff.
So you got two limits?
No, 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 no. They were limiting the 2 days before I showed up.
You weren't even there.
I scratched out a few ducks, and then they started killing them again once we left. So
gotcha.
Feels good.
Gotcha. Man, I'll tell you, here's the thing that I have yet to, I'm starting to understand it. Just the more you're exposed to duck hunting, the more you understand the draw to it. And if you understand the draw to it, and that's not the best way to describe it, but the more that you can get through the hard part of it.
Right.
Like, for instance, we took some people coon hunting the other night for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And I was trying to understand their position inside this coon hunt. We just went out in the dark and turned this dog loose that they have no connection to, nor do they probably really have any value for a coon. I mean, like most people would see a coon
right.
dead on the side of the road or trail cam pictures, and it's not this like highly valued animal. And you hear a lot of negative press about coons being overpopulated and all this stuff, nest predators. To me, when I hear a dog bark just as faint as you could hear one, and you walk to it and you get like 100 yards from the tree and you see glowing orange eyes and you hear your dog underneath it, like that is a incredible like feeling. And when you walk up and you see a ringtail hanging off the bottom of that tree, and you don't get that just in a moment. You get that over a lifetime of wanting to love something. And kind of what it represents. Uh-huh. So to me, a treed coon is just like, wow.
Yeah.
But somebody else, it might just be like, dude, I see coons every day on the side of the road dead.
Yeah.
I'm starting to learn about what that is for duck hunting.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Because duck hunting is a ton of work.
Yes.
You wake up extremely early, and more times than not, you don't do very good.
Right.
Yeah.
And this is the one thing about big game hunting is that you can go have a bad streak of deer hunting, but at the end of the season, you know, maybe you're going to get your buck. And yeah. the payoff is so big
yeah.
right.
that mm-hmm. it makes all that suffering worth it.
Mm-hmm.
And so
we calculated about 7 miles on Sunday at the place that we went.
Duck hunting. And
just
so and
hiking in, carrying decoys, and then we did a little bit of just walking around, maybe jump shooting if we could find any, and we couldn't find any. We didn't fire our guns on Sunday, hiked 7 miles. And even if we had, I mean, the most we would have brought home is 6 ducks, which right. is not nearly as much stuff as what you get off of one deer.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
So it's, but the experience of being out there, you're out early, you get to see everything, it's exciting, you're talking about where you're going to go.
Yeah.
You're calling. That's the fun part, right? Yeah. Is talking yeah. to the ducks mm-hmm. and trying to get that figured out.
I don't think you can underestimate the like aspect of like the foolishness of it.
Right.
And like so that goes hand in hand with like the talking, like camaraderie, right? Yeah. Where you're all up in the middle of the night in the dark. Standing in water, hopefully it's yeah. really cold.
Yeah.
Like that's like the best
you
case
want
scenario.
It to be cold.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you're like doing this all together with your friends and you're like, mm-hmm. why are we doing this?
Why are we doing this? Yeah, exactly.
Because I can't not.
And there's like, and no it's not like you get a trophy duck. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's like
you right. know, I used to think that, but there are so first of all, a banded if you shot
yeah,
a banded
true.
Bird, that's
true.
A trophy. But we went on a guided hunt in Nebraska last year, and we shot some widgeon that were, we'd never even seen a widgeon before. I'm not a very seasoned duck hunter, but we shot a widgeon that everybody else in the blind was like, oh my gosh, that's beautiful. And then
yeah.
when you start looking at it, you're like, oh, I understand why this is, it's really nuanced, I guess.
But,
but
it's completely luck. I mean, it's not like you saw that duck on a trail cam yeah. and I'm going to go hunt it.
Right.
but it's not. I think that would I don't know that that's the best way to say it, Josh.
No, but it is true. Like, you're not targeting a specific duck.
Right.
You're so not like, I hope
well, at least
moose
you guys aren't.
Flies in.
That teal that Misty shot the other day, we had that thing on trail cam for a week.
I've got a serious question.
A mile away.
He wasn't daylighting, and then all of a sudden.
As someone that's new to it, I picked up that banded ducks were really valuable. Is it just that it's cool?
Yeah.
It's
just,
not like
so
they're...
It's just that it's one in...
Yeah, it's rare.
It's rare.
Maybe, I don't know how many ducks literally are banded. I mean, let's just say one in 500,000 ducks. I don't know.
It's banded. And it's kind of neat that you can plug in the information on the band, see where it was banded. It's like life cycle. That's a neat little nuance into...
There is a lot of little neat things about duck hunting, and one of them is the diversity of ducks. Like, when we go out here squirrel hunting... Like, we could kill fox squirrel or gray squirrel.
Mm-hmm.
When you go deer hunting, you know, you're going to kill a deer. When you go duck hunting, all the different ducks are there's different value added to each of them.
How many different ducks can you kill in Arkansas?
Oh, man.
Lots.
You're asking the wrong guy.
There are 41 in North America. I don't know how many
really,
are in the
Mississippi
flyway.
And they're flyway specific.
I would guess about 15 to 17 species just off the top of my head.
But you're probably, in any one given sit, only going to kill like two or three varieties.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But the guys here in Arkansas, at least, want to kill mallards. They can care less about most other ducks.
Mm-hmm.
Except for teal. Misty and I are big teal people.
I'm a huge teal fan.
and they're really cool. Now, what I wanted to ask about the teal is, how are you going to cook the teal?
So I have one, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I have a teal.
Yep. Okay.
And it's not big.
Wait. You just have one? So you shot at all the other ones and you guys didn't bring any more back?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, there was one other teal killed.
Okay.
It was a two-bird morning.
Okay.
And I really want to mount mine. It is a really pretty bird.
Okay.
And so, I was having a hard time deciding whether to mount it or to cook it because the whole reason I went was I wanted to cook a duck.
Yeah.
And anyway, I got...
I say your first one you mount.
I mounted that one.
They're real pretty.
And the other one was donated to me to cook. So,
okay.
Nice.
But I think we had a gumbo, a duck gumbo.
Uh-huh.
And I thought that would be super, like, it was...
We
it
just
was,
say Dumbo.
You would call it Dumbo. That's a good idea. I thought that would... I want to do something where it's either pressure cooked or, you know, low and slow. We tried to cook duck last year. We're not rare meat people.
Okay.
And that, I think, makes a huge difference in whether you like duck or not.
Big time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so since that's not who we are, we're going to have to find another way than just like, you know, smoking or grilling it up. And...
Look up teal in a jar.
Okay.
That's a way to do it. And you put all the ingredients into a jar and cook it low and slow.
Okay.
I've heard that's pretty good. I think I might have tried it once, but I can't remember for sure. Brad, that we were talking about earlier with the beaver tail.
Okay.
They did it once, and he's not a big duck hunter, but they thought it was okay, so.
It's really funny, because I have this one teal, and in the past 2 days, everyone's given me a recipe.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, well, guys, I've got this one teal.
We're going to invite a bunch of friends over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Our other friends.
For my...
Have a bite each.
For my plate. my plate of teal.
Whitetail Institute launched the food plot revolution in 1988 with a concentration on research and real-world testing of forage products specifically for whitetail deer. Whitetail Institute's research and development team of agronomy experts provide effective, personalized service. I've been using Imperial Whitetail Clover for a long time in a food plot back behind my house. In 2007, I killed the biggest buck of my life over an Imperial Whitetail Clover small quarter-acre food plot. Imperial Whitetail Clover is the only clover scientifically developed through years of selective breeding. Clover Extreme genetic stability provides extreme cold tolerance, disease, and drought tolerance. It really does. Clover is coated with Whitetail Institute's Rain Bond, a polymer coating added for enhanced seedling survivability. They have an exclusive offer for Bear Grease listeners, 15% off Imperial Clover when you use the code BEAR at whitetailinstitute.com. That's whitetailinstitute.com and use code BEAR for 15% off. Sport Dog is the most recognized brand in the hunting dog training industry. Born in 2003 in Knoxville, Tennessee, Sport Dog was forged by a passionate group of hunters and dog trainers who intimately understood the challenges of the field and the special connection between hunters and their dogs. The people at Sport Dog know that having a well-trained hunting dog is more than just having a reliable partner. It's a commitment to their safety and unlocking their full potential. The Sport Dog promise to customers is simple. Gear the way you design it. Every product Sport Dog builds is meticulously designed and rigorously tested in the field, ensuring it withstands the toughest conditions you and your dog may encounter. Trust Sport Dog, where innovation meets passion, to elevate your hunting experience and strengthen the bond with your local companion. Using tracking equipment on my squirrel and coon dogs is extremely important to me. To track my squirrel dogs and my one old coon dog that's not very good. Get 20% off your first purchase using the code BEARGREASE. Go to www.sportdog.com/BEARGREASE to learn more. I've had a Helix Sleep mattress for over 2 years, and it is for sure the nicest mattress that I've ever slept on. I've slept much better in the last 2 years, been more comfortable than I have for my whole life, and that's true. The Helix lineup offers 20 unique mattresses, including the award-winning Lux Collection, the newly released Helix Elite Collection, a mattress designed for big and tall sleepers, and even a mattress made just for kids. Take the Helix Sleep Quiz and find your perfect mattress in under 2 minutes, and your personalized mattress is shipped straight to your door free of charge. Helix has several different mattress models to choose from, each designed for specific sleep positions and feel preferences. Helix is offering 20% off all mattress orders and 2 free pillows for our listeners. Go to helixsleep.com/clay and use the code HELIXPARTNER20. This is their best offer yet and won't last long. With Helix, better sleep starts now.
I'd like to talk about a man named Tecumseh.
Is that why we're here?
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
I like the way they say his name, Tecumseh.
Okay.
Well, there is a
that
couple
is
of ways.
The way Robert Morgan said it.
I know.
Tecumseh.
I like it.
Is that the way you wanted to say it too?
No,
guys?
Tecumseh. I've always been a Tecumseh guy.
What did you? What
you
was
started off Tecumseh, and then
really?
you were code switching on me.
Yeah.
You'd be saying Tecumseh, and then I say Tecumseh, and then you'd switch over to Tecumseh.
It's true.
And then somebody
and
gave
then when
you
you're
advice.
Not around, he goes back to
yeah.
Tecumseh.
Well, and it's neither one of them.
It's Tecumseh.
It's Tecumseh.
Tecumseh.
Oh, there's a th at the end. Tecumseh.
Man,
straight up
on the way here, I said his brother's name like 200 times so I could remember it, and now I forgot again.
Tenskwatawa. And I said it different ways more than once on the podcast.
Yeah.
Because this is what I want to start off on talking about Tecumseh, is that I have never, Isaac can vouch for this.
Sounds like Mike Tyson.
I've never researched something so long. This was well over a year ago that I started researching Tecumseh. And as I learned more and more, I pronounced the names different, and as I kind of nailed it down. But this was probably the most, well, for sure the most research that I ever did.
You went and to New York, Maryland,
okay, let's
Ohio,
tell,
Oklahoma.
I went to New York to meet with
Robert Morgan.
To meet with New York Times bestselling author, Robert Morgan. Ooh. If I'm ever a New York Times bestselling author, I want y'all to introduce
you're just
me
gonna
that
have
every
your,
single way.
You're going to have
you'd
your name
like,
legally changed.
This is my
changed.
Friend, New
this
York
is,
Times bestselling
this
author,
This is my
Clay
husband,
Newcomb.
New York Times bestselling author, Clay Newcomb. Clay, this
I listen
is my
to myself,
new friend, Eddie.
Anytime I say Robert name. Morgan's name, that's the way I want to introduce him. It's like, yeah. You did this, my man.
Maryland was?
New York Times bestselling author, Stephen Rinella.
Well, he is for sure.
Yeah.
Multiple times.
So Robert Morgan, I went to his house to talk to him. And I also interviewed him about another topic that we haven't even done yet. Then I went to
Maryland for Peter Cousins.
Went to D.C., Washington, D.C. Yeah, Maryland, essentially. Yep. To meet with Peter Cousins, who is the author of the book Tecumseh and the Prophet, which is, I mean, I'm not really authorized to say what is the seminal work on Tecumseh, because there are a lot of books on Tecumseh and a lot of stuff. But I've not found one that is
that I liked as much as this one. And I looked at several of them. So this is a great book, Tecumseh and the Prophet. It's a read, man. I mean, it's a read. It's no joke. So we went up there. Now I went to Dallas, Texas to meet Dr. Dave Edmonds, who basically has spent his life as a historical researcher of Native American history, but he's also very involved in with multiple tribes and stood before, been involved in court cases and different things that have to do with tribal history. There's a lot of stuff going on right now that has always gone on with the tribes and the U.S. government and land and treaty stuff. They're still, I mean, it's pretty wild.
Yeah.
So Dave Edmonds, very, very, very knowledgeable guy. And Dave's like 81 years old.
That's it.
Wow.
He was, he was a
young
neat guy. And then
Chief of the Shawnee Nation?
Miami, Oklahoma.
Yep.
And met with Chief Ben Barnes, which was a really,
yeah.
Can
really
you say
neat
that right,
thing.
Please? Miami.
I thought about that. Miami, Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you went to?
Well, we went to Ohio.
Watched the
Tecumseh
outdoor drama.
Yeah, me and Isaac drove to Ohio to watch. There is a outdoor drama in Chillicothe, Ohio that's been going on for 50 years.
Yeah.
I mean, a major outdoor production with like 100 cast members.
Wow. Wow.
And like, a big outdoor stadium.
Gunshots that they don't prepare you for.
Gunshots that will deafen you.
Yeah.
Our ears are ringing.
2 hour long outdoor play.
We got
like live horses.
Yeah.
Wow.
Indian battles.
Hang out with the guy who produces it and the pyrotechnics guy who have both been there for a long time.
Yeah. So there's a lot on Tecumseh. And the best part of it is that I didn't know anything about Tecumseh a year and a half ago. Nothing. I'll tell you how I got interested in him is I was reading another book, a book by Alan Eckhart called The Frontiersman, which I didn't, oh boy, I'm going to make some enemies. I didn't like the book. I actually couldn't finish it. It was written it's a very famous book. It's
he wrote
very well known.
A well-known biography of Tecumseh, and he also wrote the outdoor drama, didn't he?
That's right. And he's
Eckhart.
He's passed away, but his books, especially The Frontiersman, were done. They're written. What do they call it?
Like a historical narrative,
historical fiction.
Yeah,
basically, they take real stuff that they know happened.
Yep,
and kind of dramatize it inside of
tell
writing.
It in a story form.
So it's very informative in that you probably get a really good picture of what happened, but they're totally just guessing about like. You know, they would put words in Tecumseh's mouth about him talking to...
It would be a story that is informed by the historical figures and a lot of research, but factually, it's like...
Yeah, I had a hard time...
Yeah.
My wife loves books like that.
Well, she should check it out.
She loves a historical fiction.
So, but I was telling you
I feel lied to.
I was telling you why I was reading that book, and it was talking about Tecumseh, because he's in the book, and it talked about how his name meant... Panther crossing the sky.
That's and pretty dope.
They knew how to name.
Yeah,
kids.
They did.
Yeah. And in Squatawa, I mean,
my
even
mom
just on
gave me Josh.
Syllables, that's a good one. Yeah.
It's so complex, though. Tenskwatawa's name wasn't Tenskwatawa until after he had the visions.
Okay.
His name was
correct.
Larry.
Lalawitha.
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 Yeah.
Yeah.
Still think it's a better name than Josh. Sorry, man.
Both of them are great.
So
moms, you need to work a little harder at this.
Yeah, do better.
Both are strong in their own way.
The other thing that I wish I had known, which I declared on the podcast, was that I wish I had known about the burying a whitetail antler with an umbilical cord.
Oh, that's
cord.
Big.
Perchance, did y'all do that with me, Dad?
No, we did not.
You got that umbilical cord floating around anywhere?
I don't
know,
man.
Is it too late to bury it?
Man,
is there another body part you could use?
That's a great
cut
question.
Off a finger. Yeah,
yeah, maybe. Well, Misty, what do you think of the podcast?
I thought it was really good. I thought you're taking a pretty complex topic, and you're just trying to look at it, you know, shoot it straight. get the facts and none of the other stuff around it. And I, you know, you acknowledged in the podcast that this kind of stuff, for no good reason, can be difficult to talk about because people get so, people get so easily offended and don't necessarily want to look at things. People want to make a lot of qualifying statements around everything. And I thought you did a good job of just like saying, this is what happened. This is a story. It's a very intriguing story. I mean, there's so many different aspects of this particular story as you're going through it. It almost felt unreal. I mean, like the brother, what did he, I remember your phrase. Do you think he called that down? Yeah.
When Tecumseh told William Henry Harrison that he was going to go back to Detroit and stomp his foot and it was going to, the earth was going to shake his house down.
Okay. Yeah. And right. So the earthquakes but there was just several aspects of it that were, almost unbelievable. And I'm not saying that I don't believe these things happen. Like I do believe these things happen, but I just thought it was it's a very intriguing tale. I'm looking forward to hearing the other two. I think it's a sad tale. I mean, on a lot of different levels, personal, like what happened to his people. If I put myself, and I think that's what you did really well in this. You made Tecumseh a person.
Yes, very good.
You know, you made him a person that mm-hmm. you could relate to, and not like this heroic figure, which he was. But or you took someone whose life had a whole lot of dynamics in it that seemed too big to be real, and you could kind of feel like, well, if I was in his boat, if I was in his shoes, this is how I would. I can understand. I can understand.
He was
this
a man that
better.
Loved his people.
Yeah, I love.
He loved being an Indian.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
He loved living the way that they wanted to live.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, and it's I think it also gives a level of. Well, I'll let someone else talk. And if y'all don't
Josh,
say it, I will.
What do you think? You can give an overarching statement, but like, what is one thing? I can think of one thing that if I were talking to you, I would get excited about. And I would say, man, you wouldn't believe this about this.
I thought it was fascinating, the overlap with Daniel Boone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that was
did that
fascinating.
Surprise you, Dad?
It did.
Yeah, that was that kind of came out of nowhere. Like, I didn't quite, you know, I listened today to the podcast and I didn't quite catch all the timelines. Yeah. And then when you started talking about that, I'm like, oh, man, this is like two huge figures in American history just palling around. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You think
that's pretty incredible.
At the very least, in more of Daniel Boone's biographies, it would come up. Oh, and by the way, he had these interactions with this probably the most prolific leader
but
of
it was like
Native
a 10-year-old kid.
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, like Daniel Boone wouldn't have even... Eventually, he would have known who he was.
I mean, surely Tecumseh would have known who Daniel Boone was, at the very least.
100%.
And I thought that was pretty fascinating.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we don't. There is no record, right, of them actually...
No, they were
contemporaries.
All that stuff back there is so... There is a lot of folklore around all those guys.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Folklore meaning just we're not exactly sure how to... Yeah. Dial it in.
Possibly exaggerated tales.
But that is not folklore.
Right.
I mean, like, Tecumseh was with Blackfish, who was his adopted father, and it was the same Blackfish that adopted Boone, and they would have absolutely overlapped. So, I mean, there's no question about that. The speculation is, was Tecumseh one of the kids that Boone gave candy to?
Right.
The statement I made, I made two just interesting statements that I remembered. I remember Boone telling his son Nathan that Blackfish would suck on a sugar cube mm-hmm. and give it to him. I mean, man, when you think about like a way to like capture a moment in history, Boone knew how to do that.
Yeah.
And it showed so much of what Blackfish wanted from Boone mm-hmm. and who he was. But the way I said it in the podcast, it made it sound like Blackfish was giving candy to the kids. Boone was the one who also told Nathan, his son, that, hey, I would give candy. I guess he got sugar cubes from somewhere mm-hmm. to the little kids in Chillicothe. Or they weren't in Chillicothe at that time. They were. He could have given a sugar cube to Tecumseh.
Yeah.
That's speculation. We don't know that.
So I thought that was really fascinating. Also, we've talked a little bit about Chief Ben Barnes Mm-hmm. Fascinating guy to hear speak. I mean, just he seems very articulate and knowledgeable, and I'm hoping we're going to get to hear from him more.
Oh, for sure. It was kind of, I kind of hated it that he didn't show up more on this first episode. He just didn't, we didn't talk as much with him about the chronology of Tecumseh's life.
Uh-huh.
So he weighs in a whole lot more in later episodes. And we're going to hear about the Shawnee Nation today.
I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, Dad, what'd you think?
Oh, as always, very, very good. Really deep. I mean, it was just like, I just couldn't believe all the action in that thing. An amazing guy. You know, I read about Quanta Parker years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The two guys remind me of each other.
Yeah. Empire of the Summer Moon.
And I never dreamed there'd be an Indian more popular and bigger significance than Quanta. I mean, he entertained presidents and but this guy was amazing. I mean, I liked it when they said you have a personality arise. They didn't say a generation or every other generation, but you see it in sports. You know, you go, this is a generational athlete. But he was one in a many, many, many people that had the ability to lead, just a natural ability. And, you know, his looks, that was that's kind of interesting. You know, I mean, he had everything you would want in a leader. He even had a limp where people could tell who he was from a distance.
Yeah.
I mean, he was a beautiful guy. He was built well. He was strong. He was, his voice, I mean, everything about him was said, I am the guy, follow me.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not sure. I assume he took the nation down the right path. I don't know about that. I mean, right. You know, he cost a lot of lives by taking them that direction. But
yeah,
it's also intriguing to me that it was just Ohio, Wisconsin, Indiana, you know, Illinois, just mid-America.
Yeah.
It sounded like a pretty good plan to me. Let's go for that.
Yeah, that's so deep. It's hard to get everything right, but the simplest way to say it is that Tecumseh didn't think that the whole continent of North America was going to be given back to the Native Americans. They just wanted an Indian nation.
Yeah,
and that, when you think about it, is really doesn't sound that wild,
right?
It's feasible. Wild.
I mean, think about Europe. Think about Europe. Mm-hmm. Europe is full of different countries. I mean, there's a country like the U.S. that has this much geographic land of contiguous, you know, geographic areas under the same jurisdiction of government is pretty wild. And, you know, if there was a country inside of this, heck, we'd just be like, yeah, that's...
It would have worked some way. I mean, we would have combined forces together and been like one country. I mean, who knows where it would have gone, but pretty crazy.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing about Tecumseh that's so intriguing. And we really haven't even got into, these things are so hard to put together because we haven't even got into really what he did.
Right.
We described we spent a lot of time on his childhood, which I thought, that's always one of the most interesting parts to me of these guys' lives is who made them and why are they the way they are? And when you see the crisis in Tecumseh's life, oh my gosh, we can't. Now, there are people on planet Earth today that can identify with living in a war zone and having people killed. I mean, this is not something that is unusual to the
humanity.
Human race.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for us here in North America, yeah. But I mean, that. Three major figures, like every father he ever had, died by the time he was 14 years old. His older brother, who then was tasked to raise him, Chisiquah, dies. Chisiquah says, I don't want to be buried like these. You're not supposed to say that word anymore, squaw. They don't say that anymore.
Indians don't say that?
They don't. They
really?
Don't. Yep. So, but that's what they said. He said, I want the fowls of the air to pick my bones.
I love that, man. Yeah. I just thought that was awesome. Pick I'm thinking bones, that's kind of the way I want to go.
We can make that happen.
Do you know there was a duck that had to get renamed because it was called an old squaw?
Yeah.
It's a long tail now.
Yep.
I'm for it.
Yep.
I just want it recorded. When I heard that, I immediately looked at Clay and said, "Hey, I don't feel the same way."
For what it's
going on the record.
Those the Native Americans, and this goes back to what's so intriguing to me from a language and kind of folk speech. Like, where did the kind of the American dialect come from? Is that the Native American orators were powerful. You go back and listen to the very first introduction of the podcast. I start off with a quote from Tecumseh, where he's talking to who would eventually become a U.S. president, William Henry Harrison. Just listen to the way he spoke. Mm-hmm. And there are hundreds of Tecumseh quotes where, I mean, those guys, man, that's all they had. They didn't have written language. They didn't have books to write stuff in. I mean, in most of their history. What they had was spoken language, mm-hmm. and they were masters of it. And then when these Europeans came over here with the English language, they heard these guys talk and were like, wow. And you know, Robert Morgan is the one who told me that, I said all that to say what Chisiqua said was, that's just the way they spoke. They were just dramatic in the way that they spoke. You know, he said, I want the fowls of the air to pick my bones. I don't want to be buried back at camp. But that would have really impacted Tecumseh. And and I'm picking on two things here. The fog of death over his life, but then that translated into him being this leader, visionary, with what he believed was in the best interest for his people, and then him being this great orator and leader. Incredible stuff. Isaac, what was your favorite part?
I got three big ones.
Okay.
One, the idea that he like stood up on it, the first war party outing, 15 years old, uh-huh. against, like,
yep.
If I was in that position, I'd be like, yep, we torture people. That's what I'm into now. Like, because I had just no like personal authority or, you know.
Or identity.
Yeah, to be able to be like, hey, guy, even if I felt that way, you know, and I'm not trying to map my current understanding of the world onto these people, but to see someone do that is truly remarkable to me.
Yeah. To stand against a trend.
Yeah.
Because you could dice it up.
Not just, but as not as a full-grown man, as a 15, I mean,
right.
to some degree he was, but like as a 15-year-old boy, I was, you know, lighting bottle rockets with my buddies and getting up to no good. And he's like, hey, let's reconsider this tradition.
Yeah.
Remarkable.
Yeah.
Two, I've been back and forth. So like,
hey, let me stop you. Hold
okay,
your number two.
Okay.
I want to talk about that because that was a definer of Tecumseh's life.
Yeah.
That was what got back to the American people that made them love Tecumseh. Was that was part of what got back. And I had asked Peter Cozens, I said, where did that come from? And in the section we used on the podcast, it was kind of like, we don't know where he got that. Like, how did that come? What wasn't on the podcast, because I just had to chop it, was he told me that there were some other chiefs, like way back, like a random chief every now and then would be like, hey, this is bad. We shouldn't do this. So he probably had that in his...
Yeah.
In
took
his
a historical
lineage at some point, but he still had to stand up
yeah.
vehemently.
Yeah.
And we just told this time when he was 15 when he yeah. did that. That was the first time he made a stink about it.
Yeah.
But all through his life, even to yeah. his deathbed, he was going in and like scolding guys for torturing prisoners, which was extremely common.
Hmm.
Whole life.
And
two,
to bring it back to Daniel Boone. It makes me wonder, he was 10 years old when Daniel Boone was captured. Only 5 years later, he's standing up to a war party saying, like, let's reconsider how we operate here. So it wouldn't surprise me if he stood out as a child in this circumstance. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, 10 years to 15 years old is not that big of a difference. Number
yeah.
two.
Yeah.
I, like, my background, I maybe considered more of a bleeding heart, or I don't know what you would want to call it, but like I empathize with the plight of Native Americans and I feel kind of bad about the way that they have been yeah. treated historically speaking. And I was listening to a podcast recently that deals with a modern struggle of Native rights against
the established government. And I got to thinking, like, in any other circumstance, a conquered people, like, it doesn't matter what they feel. Like, the history of people is that we conquer other peoples, and then it's like, too bad, you lose. And so I was like, is my feeling correct about this? But one of the things that made me swing back to my original position on this is the idea that what is at stake here is not a conquered people versus a conqueror, but it is a powerful entity that operates in bad faith, mm-hmm. giving treaties and then going back on their word, saying, here's how we're going to deal with you, and then discovering that that was a lie or a ruse to whatever. And so ultimately, what we're saying is, not only is this a people who is treated poorly in terms of they had the bad luck to be overran by people who had better technology and a bunch of disease, but then those people who were operating in power dealt in bad faith with them and have continued to. And so that's a lot of the issue that we're dealing with today. Not this abstract concept of this people was treated poorly back then, but our government said, here's how we'll operate with you. Here is a legal document that says, these are your rights, this is your place, that continually was treated like garbage. And mm-hmm. so I think that that is an interesting thing to view this through, because not only is there this moral question of what's right and wrong, but there is this legal question of they are probably owed something to some degree. And through that lens, the idea of, hey, I'd just like to set up this Indian country, that seems like a very valid and very small ask, especially because that was guaranteed to them by the way our government operated. And so I think that's an interesting concept. You touched on it in the podcast, but
yeah,
we didn't go in super deep.
Yeah.
Which leads to my third point, which is he's so interesting, and this is kind of what Gary was talking about, in this like great like confluence of all of these personality and physical traits, the oration. So much of the story of Native Americans is our government dealing with them in a way that they don't understand, like the idea of private land ownership. And so like to treat with them in that way is kind of dirty pool. And then here we have somebody like Tecumseh, who understands the concept, is well-versed in the way of the American people, but then also has the backbone to stand up and go, I reject that. So I'm going to lead my people with this understanding into a way that could potentially bring success. And I think that's another just really fascinating aspect of his unique personhood.
Yeah.
Whitetail Institute launched the food plot revolution in 1988 with a concentration on research and real-world testing of forage products specifically for whitetail deer. Whitetail Institute's research and development team of agronomy experts provide effective, personalized service. I've been using Imperial Whitetail Clover for a long time in a food plot back behind my house. In 2007, I killed the biggest buck of my life over an Imperial Whitetail Clover small quarter-acre food plot. Imperial Whitetail Clover is the only clover scientifically developed through years of selective breeding. Clover Extreme genetic stability provides extreme cold tolerance, disease, and drought tolerance. It really does. Clover is coated with Whitetail Institute's Rain Bond, a polymer coating added for enhanced seedling survivability. They have an exclusive offer for Bear Grease listeners, 15% off Imperial Clover when you use the code BEAR at whitetailinstitute.com. That's whitetailinstitute.com, and use code BEAR for 15% off. Sport Dog is the most recognized brand in the hunting dog training industry. Born in 2003 in Knoxville, Tennessee, Sport Dog was forged by a passionate group of hunters and dog trainers who intimately understood the challenges of the field and the special connection between hunters and their dogs. The people at Sport Dog know that having a well-trained hunting dog is more than just having a reliable partner. It's a commitment to their safety and unlocking their full potential. The Sport Dog promise to customers is simple. Gear the way you design it. Every product Sport Dog builds is meticulously designed and rigorously tested in the field, ensuring it withstands the toughest conditions you and your dog may encounter. Trust Sport Dog, where innovation meets passion. to elevate your hunting experience and strengthen the bond with your local companion. Using tracking equipment on my squirrel and coon dogs is extremely important to me. To track my squirrel dogs and my one old coon dog that's not very good. Get 20% off your first purchase using the code BEARGREASE. Go to www.sportdog.com/BEARGREASE to learn more. The old timers say that the turkeys start gobbling when the leaves are as big as squirrels' ears and the red buds start popping. And we're about there. And we are there in the South. The Onyx Hunt app is one of my most valuable tools in the spring woods. With tools like coniferous versus deciduous tree distribution layer, you can save time by locating edges or transition areas of mixing habitats from home. Find an area like this with water in close proximity, and more than likely, there will be a goblin turkey nearby. Knowing the exact boundaries of private ground ensures I stay on the right side of the fence, but can easily find public ground to go see if I can't strike a gobbler. If you do get one to sound off, using compass mode and waypoints will help you pinpoint his exact location, allowing you to move in and make the perfect setup to bring him right into your lap. Download the Onyx Hunt app today. You'll be glad you did. Onyx has a special offer for you. Use code BEARGREASE to receive 20% off your membership at onxmaps.com/hunt this spring.
James, what did you think?
Well, there were a couple aspects of it that jumped out to me. The first part of it that I was really struck by, because I think if you took the names off of all the different parties in it and just told the story from the standpoint of a charismatic leader, an oppressed people, or you could say it from an oppressed people, or you could even say it from the standpoint of people who felt like they were being treated badly, maybe, or they weren't. Because history is full of these figures, and you touched on it, this once-in-a-lifetime or once-in-a-generation, these people who come along who can inspire a revolution, right? So good revolutions and bad revolutions have happened throughout history. So that was the first thing that kind of struck me, is that this is one of those kind of stories that just didn't result in the kind of happy ending, or you know, if it was put Churchill in there or put Gandhi in there as Tecumseh, mm-hmm. okay, and they were victorious, we would remember the history differently. But he right. wasn't victorious,
right?
Right, and so ultimately,
wait, what? He doesn't win?
Oh, God.
Hey, wait till you hear Ben Barnes comment on that.
Love it.
I asked him.
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah.
It's up for debate.
Okay. So you...
I understand your point. I was making a joke.
It's a great point, though. So, but that's the thing that struck me, was how it's a charismatic... It's a charismatic leader who... And the second thing that I kind of saw was... You had said that you had this religious movement, started as a religious movement, and then, you know, with his brother, and then he came along and added the political and military component to it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. How often has that happened? Even fairly recently.
Yeah.
You know? So history has this way of repeating itself.
Yeah.
And then thinking about how you had mentioned that they, back to the storytelling and the way that they spoke and how that was basically borrowed. Here you had people on essentially two opposite sides, right? So the Europeans who were moving in wanted to conquer, and their leadership and their, you know, the religious leaders, their political leaders were looking at their opposition and copying what they admired that their opposition was able to do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that still happens too.
Yeah.
Every day. You know, one side gets a little bit ahead, and then the other side copies their tactics and they get a little bit ahead, or
yeah.
So the overarching thing there for me is that I was struck by how easily you could take this story and place it in so many other times in history.
Well,
and
you
have
just
the same
you
thing.
Just took the punchline from episode two, James.
So
thanks
now,
a lot.
Now you're fired.
Thanks a lot. You're not getting the invite back.
I didn't get the memo. Dang
no,
it.
That's a great observation because that's what I talk about it with Dave Edmonds, and it's so interesting to hear him describe it. In that, when you turn a bunch of people loose in the same place, and there's border conflicts and cultural conflicts, like the Native Americans and the Americans, basically all the same stuff like always happens.
Mm-hmm.
Different players, different characters, different scenarios, but it's really similar. So yeah, that's a good observation.
I also thought it was really interesting how the reaction was, hey, we got to get rid of this modern stuff that's coming in here and go back to our simpler way of life.
Isn't that interesting?
I mean, so much of history is that conflict between progress and our roots.
It is.
It's like we feel it personally, we feel it generationally, we feel it as a country, and
that's always the political tension pretty much anywhere.
Yep.
It's the political tension in this country.
Yep.
Is that, well, you know, who was the America from 50 years ago? We're not that anymore.
And it's an idealized way also.
Right.
It can be.
Right.
You know, we remember the good things from the past and we forget the whatever. You know, we forget the childhood poverty or, you know, birth rates or, you know, whatever it is that we kind of gloss over from the past that wasn't as good.
What do you think, Dad? Didn't have a thought?
Yeah, well, I've had several, but I forget them pretty quickly.
Remember the past.
It, you know, the point you just made about going back the way we used to be, you know, I thought that was really critical. You see it all mm-hmm. through our society today. I want to go back the way we were 20 years ago. I mean, how we teach our kids all this stuff. They had the same issues.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go back to the Civil War, you know, wherever you go, I mean, we fight the same demons. And when his brother received this vision or whatever it was, his dream, he went around the country as an evangelist. And they said a lot of the early evangelists were Indians, like
yeah.
Oral Roberts.
That was fascinating.
And stuff. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know.
That overlap was really interesting, and I saw it coming in the book before they actually said it. So in the way the book's structured, it talks about Tenskwatawa's,
mm-hmm.
his vision and the components of the doctrine. And I'm reading it, I'm thinking, there's a lot of overlap with Christianity.
Sounds like a circuit preacher.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, you got the serpent. I mean, that's
tied
right in with what we believe. And then you've got the master, whatever they call it.
Master of life.
So you got God and Satan.
And a lot of it, you know, we couldn't get into like all the doctrine just because it just, there's only so much. I tried to give people just what they need to understand. But the whole thing was about gaining access back to the Great Spirit, which is essentially the story of Christianity, access to God, you know. And so it was the same thing. It was a similar story, and it was so interesting to hear. Go ahead.
Before I forget it.
Yeah.
The brother said that, I've already forgotten it, but the point that I'm driving at, I've talked to Indians, you know, people that I know today, and they say one great thing that came from all this was Christianity. And so there was some good that came. I'll raise my hand again. I'm getting too old to be on the render. Hey, here you go. Here's a point.
Here's a point.
No, this isn't it. This is better.
Okay.
Even better.
When I think about the render, the brotherhood, the bond that we have here, we eat out of the same bowl. We eat out of the same, with the same spoon.
There you go.
Same stuff.
Strong
man.
Metaphor, huh?
Yeah, there you go.
Does anybody want this metaphor? Sugar cube I've been chewing on?
Yeah, pass the sugar cube. That's what we're going to start doing. No, I thought that was super interesting that at the time of the Great Awakening in this country, and there was this frontier Christian revival. Same time this was happening. Super interesting. And the miracles were very interesting. Mm-hmm. The eclipse. So when you read it, there's some guys that just straight up say Tenskwatawa knew there was an eclipse coming, and it just
worked.
William
out
Henry
perfectly.
Harrison just threw him a softball, a slow pitch, and just let him knock it out of the park. But I mean, I don't know how fast does word travel about a solar eclipse? I mean, today even with Instagram, I only know him about a few days before they happen, and he said it 50 days before. I don't know, and then.
But no one can predict an earthquake.
No. No.
Do you think Tecumseh was like, it happened, or do you think he was like, lucked out on that one?
I
dodged a bullet.
I asked Robert Morgan.
Yeah.
He said he
New York Times bestseller.
New York Times bestselling author Robert Morgan.
Yep.
Hey, he blamed a lot of the problems not on the white man, but on the way they were living.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's right.
I mean, that was pretty insane. I mean, we do the same thing today. We talk the same way today a lot of times.
Yeah.
Yeah, they said that it was a punishment for, they believed that what was happening to their culture was a punishment for them assimilating.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the other part of this story, the more I learn about these things, is that this all didn't happen real quick. Like right now, when we tell the story, we say, yeah, there was a civilization here, and then that civilization was basically moved and removed. This thing took place over the course of several hundred years. And so I was really, almost disappointed in a way when I learned that a lot of the Shawnees rejected Tecumseh and his brother. I mean, mm-hmm. You just kind of were like, doggone it, really?
And you said JC, man. I'm not too sure about that, brother.
I mean,
he was the one who said a prophet wasn't being accepted in his hometown.
Oh, man.
What, it's interesting to think about the timeline. So they accepted European settlement, 1492, right? Took a couple of goes to start. If you want to look at the Vikings settling sooner, that's a different thing. But if you just go with 1492... we've not been the United States of America longer than we have, right? And so, like, it seems like this very short, compressed thing, but, like, that's almost 300 years before Tecumseh comes along.
Yeah, that's a lot of time.
That's a lot of time, especially in the
New
World.
They were talking about Christopher Columbus the same way we are.
Yeah.
I mean, the difference between 300 and 500 years.
Right.
I mean, it's like, yeah. Yeah. It's a complicated history, and it is intimidating to do a series like this because, I'm not trying to say that this is an all-inclusive, that this podcast is going to cover everything about Tecumseh's life. That'd be impossible. But, man, I want it to have mm-hmm. as much as it can that makes sense of the time. And to me, like, the revelations that I have about these things as I study them is what I put on the podcast. And I thought it was a powerful metaphor, the soccer game.
Oh, it's great.
It would be like trying to describe what it would be like for the Native Americans and with an understanding of their understanding of private land ownership, which I'm fascinated with.
Mm-hmm.
I own piece of land that's not here, small piece of land, and when I go there, that's not where I live. Okay,
we got
another little mm-hmm. piece of property. When I go there,
can you drop me a pen?
Negative. I'm like, I don't own this place. This is ridiculous. This is a joke. I don't own this place. Yeah, I've got the right to be here. Nobody else does. I don't own this place.
Mm-hmm.
I for real feel like that when I'm standing there. I'm like, this is a very abstract, weird feeling. I identify with those guys.
Yeah.
But okay, soccer game. When you understand that the Native American, a lot of the tribes, that their connection to their gods and the spiritual world is very site specific, super good intel
mm-hmm.
to understand their culture. And then for a group to come in that had private land ownership, worldview, and understanding. It would be like a soccer game forming in your yard around you. And the rules of the game violate your worldview. You don't understand them. You don't know them. But you're in the, you find yourself in the middle of the game. And whoever wins gets the land.
Yeah. To just like flesh this out a little bit further, on my point number two, I feel like the rules of the game are additionally convoluted by the fact that the opponent is telling you the rules and then changing them.
There you go. That's it.
You that can pick up the ball. Whistle.
See,
you
your point
up the
number
ball.
Two is just way too long. You should have just said that. We'd all got it.
Pick up the ball. And then
they cheated at the soccer game. We'd all know what you meant.
Additionally, you're not really aware that you're going to lose your house at the beginning of the game.
Right.
It just slowly unfolds that, like, hold up.
Yeah, we're just going to play for fun.
Somebody just moved a bed.
They're going to give you somewhere else, but you got to walk there.
You know, the most amazing thing to me is what James said.
Dang it.
We've got a hero that lost. That's just uncalled for in
American
culture.
It
doesn't happen.
It doesn't happen. I mean,
But I bet. But I think history is probably full of that.
Oh yeah.
That's the thing is, history is littered with these people that have done amazing things, but they just didn't win, and whoever won gets to write the history. Right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And the just don't always win. I mean, they don't win. I thought the other thing, if I had been asked, Misty, why don't you ask me?
Clay, what did you?
You
think?
Got to make the podcast.
What? No, you asked me, Misty.
What did you think? What was your favorite part?
Thanks for asking. That's great. To me, one of the most interesting parts was about the influence of Native American culture on early American identity.
I thought that was super interesting.
I think that's way underrated. And I'll walk you even more through what I said on the podcast. So and I hope it made sense.
It did.
I think the difference between Europeans today, like you just go get a random sampling of a guy from Europe and you put him with a random guy from, I don't know, just a state in this country. And it would help if that guy was somehow connected to the land in a way, not somebody from urban America. I think the difference between those guys, which would be a vast difference, if you could really trace it back, if you could do a ancestryandme.com with culture and figure out kind of where they came from, I think the difference is the Native American influence that impacts us to this day. Because when you think, because the Daniel Boone was the first real American non-governmental hero. America's first heroes were like George Washington and Thomas Jefferson and these kind of guys. The only guys written more about than Boone are those two in American history, American literature. The only two guys written more about. And Boone, so Boone, in a philosophical level, taught us how to be an American. He was the archetype. And Daniel Boone was tried for treason, Josh, because they thought he was an Indian. He went and lived with them, became adopted with them, knew the Shawnee language, knew how to trade. He would come back and they wouldn't trust him. They're like, dude, you can't trust that guy. He's been with, you know, these domestic terrorists.
Mm-hmm.
And he was so influenced by the Native Americans, and all these frontiersmen were. I mean, they taught us how to live in this place. I think that's fascinating. I think it's fascinating.
Point of order real quick. My dad, who is wonderful and listens to the podcast religiously, Chris Neal, called on the way down here and said...
What'd Chris say?
He said, is Clay sure that all of his descendants are white Europeans?
I said most of them.
Your descendants?
Mm-hmm.
You did say that because I paid attention.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I have. Oh,
no,
you should be very sure about this, actually, Clay.
You should be extremely sure. I didn't get it the first time he said it either.
I caught it.
I don't.
Are
I don't.
You sure all of your Missy. Descendants
are all your descendants?
Oh, descendants. Oh no!
They should.
Tell Chris Neal.
You and I both missed it. Okay. I listened to the podcast twice yesterday. Missed it okay. and missed it when he first said
okay,
it.
Okay, I see okay, what you okay. say. Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
I love it. It's like being on LinkedIn. But when you're on LinkedIn and you make a grammatical error, you're hammered. On Instagram, they'll let it slide.
Yeah. Instagram doesn't even let you edit some of your things to fix those grammatical errors.
Doggone it. Yeah. No, tell Chris I'm sorry.
I did. I was listening
well, so then
to
you're
the
saying it was false.
Good point.
The Meat Eater podcast with where they do the,
yep.
The game show one.
Yes, trivia. Yep. Trivia.
And Spencer Newhart said pronunciation.
He did.
Ooh. He did.
Yeah. Oh no, it's viral.
Yeah,
no, I love it. Yeah. It is. It's like great. A sickness. It's spreading.
Yeah. Listen, great. Yesterday Clay
influencer,
said
right
pronunciation.
Here. You did.
He did. Oh, yeah. He said it in the podcast, and when I was listening to it. I paused and said, is that how you say that?
Surely that can't be right.
You're a total influencer, Clay.
Well, so what's coming up on episode number two, Clay?
It's second half of Tecumseh's life.
Okay.
Second half of his life. So we really haven't even got into what he did, which is he was highly involved in the War of 1812.
Right.
Sided with the British.
Okay.
So he's totally in with the British. So, no, a fascinating guy. And we didn't even talk about him being a hunter. That was the main thing he was known as a young man, was a great hunter.
Oh, yeah. None of us picked up on that. 40 deer?
Yeah.
He killed 40 deer?
40 deer in 3 days.
It's funny. That's the part that Clay really questioned in the whole story. He's like, oh, no, about the 40 deer.
Hold on. I know something about hunting, and that is not.
Well, it's possible, but no, when I'm reading all these things, especially when there's a guy that far back, a lot of the questions I have for some of these historians, and I've learned a lot from Robert Morgan and from some of these other guys, is like, how do we know that? Like, how do we know he did that? Because, I mean, I hope he did that, but I want to know how. And a lot of them, when they come from multiple sources, that
it's
are
a good
legitimate,
indicator,
but some things are just like you trace it back and you'd be like, yeah, somebody wrote that in their journal and they never even met the guy.
Yeah.
And
I think the point
story,
stands that even if it was half that, if it was a tenth of that, yeah, you would be a great hunter. Like, yeah, if I killed four deer in 3 days, somebody would be like, dude, that Isaac guy knows how to hunt.
Yeah, he's getting it done.
Yeah, so I think the point stands.
Yeah, yeah. He was known as a great hunter in the Shawnee Nation, and that was a major deal for them. That was like being a NBA athlete.
Speaking of hunting, what's coming up on March 4th?
Black Bear Bonanza.
9 a.m. to 5 p.m.
at the Benton County Quail Barn in Bentonville, Arkansas.
Shoot, dang.
Yep. Get your tickets, $10 each. The website, backcountryhunters.org. Yep. Go to the events page
If you have a protest you want to launch, you might try that. An audio-based protest, you might try that during the Bear Grease Render recording.
What do you mean?
I'm just trying to incentivize some people to come out that might not otherwise.
Oh, you think they might start like chanting?
Yeah, could be.
Let
I don't know.
Misty talk.
Yeah.
Let Misty talk.
I was thinking if you have an owl hoot, you should be practicing.
And it doesn't matter where you're listening.
Hey, I think we're going to get to the point where we're going to have like qualifying rounds. Oh.
We might. We had
so
a lot of
not,
people last
because
year.
It would be, if it was like an hour and a half of people getting up there and owl hooting, you'd get tired of it.
Yeah.
But you'd have to have.
How many competitors did you have last year?
I mean, like probably 40.
I think
Are you serious?
We had about 40 people.
The owl hoots,
I mean, it was a lot.
In Arkansas were good. I'm just going to say that. I'm not saying they were all from Arkansas, but we've been to other places this year. And
but you do get the guys that probably have never owl hooted much that just want to get up there and have a fun time,
right?
Which is cool.
Yep.
What are the chances of me doing all right with a trench coat and a real owl?
Man,
if I get up there with
if you can make it, if you can put an owl under your trench coat and make it hoot, I say let him go.
Bonus points for execution, right?
Yeah, but Game and Fish will be there, so just beware. Yeah.
That's what
the
trench coat is
for. A barred owl. Man, I wish I had a barred owl.
I know you do. I know you do, Clay.
Well, hey, this has been great. This is a long time coming for me. I've been planning this for a long time. It's come so.
It's true.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right. Very good.
Hey, everybody, listen up. I got mega huge news. Meat Eater Live is heading back out on the road. That's right. Join me and the crew. Clay Newcomb, Cal, Yanni, Spencer's going to be there. Phil the Engineer is going to be there. Meat Eater Live, headed back out. Now, when you get every ticket, okay, every ticket you buy, you get a signed copy of our new Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook. This tour is celebrating the release of the book. Buy a ticket, get a signed copy, Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook, wild game recipes for the grill, smoker, camp stove, and campfire, which I'll point out is a $38 value. Here's where we're going to go. April 23rd, the Mesa Arts Center in Mesa, Arizona. April 24th, the Balboa Theater in San Diego. April 25th, the Grove in Anaheim, California. April 27th, the Crest Theater in Sacramento. April 29th, the Union in Salt Lake City. April 30th, the Egyptian in Boise. May 1st, the Wilma Theater in Missoula. May 2nd, the Bing Crosby Theater in Spokane, Washington. May 4th, Revolution Hall in Portland, Oregon. And May 5th, the last day of the tour, Pantages Theater in Tacoma, Washington. For tickets and more information, visit the events page at themeateater.com. Hope to see you at the show.